Barry Wiseman. Is
yeah, it's full.
The last angry man. I don't think he's that angry.
Oh man, are you kidding? Today?
Okay. Well, okay.
Everybody's getting it today. But you know, before we get serious, Jim, I had to drive around town today. I want to know what dingbat at City Hall gives out the permits for construction, and how come we got like 3 months of spring and summer, and everything is shoved into the last 6 weeks before it gets cold, and you can't drive anywhere in this goddamn city. Everything was blocked.
Like the same reason that De La Concorde overpass fell down.
A little
incompetence, negligence. Incompetence,
Jim,
negligence.
It was unbelievable today. You couldn't go
dereliction.
Down. You couldn't go down Mountain. You couldn't go uphill. You couldn't go down Pine eastbound. You had one way out of downtown. When you got out of downtown, Park Avenue, St. Lawrence, it's like everybody got their permits at the same time, and everybody's all over each other. The city isn't moving. It's the most insane thing I've ever seen.
You done? You want to write a piece for the Gazette?
Bloody hell.
How I was angry working my way through traffic.
Hey, listen, Jim, you know I don't normally get angry about what you call, you know, the Joe Hudson or Joe Beaconsfield stuff, but this is dumb. 9,000 civil servants sitting around trying to run Montreal. Somebody can't figure out how to do a schedule for construction? God, no. You had trucks in the middle.
The answer is no. The answer is no. Yeah.
Do you know there was a line? No. There was a line from...
Okay, Barrel.
What?
Life is too precious to listen to.
Okay, let's go. Let's go.
Petty.
Let's go. Petty. I'm petty. When you do it, it's great, right?
No.
Do you know how often you bring up this shit?
All right, Barrel. Just chill out. Listen, I wanted to ask you about Jean Charest.
Like, why?
There was a lot of talk.
I thought you were
going to
ask me about Bob Ray today.
Well, I'll get to that.
Good.
But Jean Charest, we got into that last night. But
here's
Jean
Charest today.
Right. And it just keeps resonating.
It's a false pipe.
But, I wanted to... All right, fair enough. Then let's talk about
Go ahead and talk about Charest. Go ahead.
Well, I want to talk to you about the forestry industry. Your union guys tell you what's going on. Charest now has abandoned any hope of a fall, any possibility of a fall election. He's going to stake all his chances on getting a big fat check from Stephen Harper in the spring budget, in the spring federal budget, in the form of some kind of forestry bailout. In reality, what's the chance of that?
Not much. I
wouldn't have thought.
The federal government doesn't believe in it. Stephen Harper doesn't believe in it. And I think, if Harper gets a majority, it's going to change the face of government in Canada. The handouts will stop. The main reason why the forestry industry is in trouble in Quebec and it's lost its standing as the number one supplier in the world has everything to do with the fact that the textile industry is suffering and other industries are suffering in Canada. And that is in one word, China. As Guy Chevret pointed out earlier today, you've even got huge companies like Commonwealth Plywood. I mean, they're buying their stuff from China. And we're letting it.
Yeah.
And we're subsidizing it as Canadians. That's the most insane thing. 50 cents
it's
of every
totally
dollar
insane.
EDC subsidies to an economy that is $8 trillion large and ours is $1 trillion. I mean, you know, if you're worth $100,000, right? And I'm worth $300,000, never mind worth. We got that in the bank. Why would you give me money? And that's
Export
what we're doing with
Development
China.
Corporation.
Of course.
It's the wise thing to do.
And that's the only reason.
Yeah, why has Stephen Harper, if he's so smart, if he's so good, why hasn't he pulled the plug on that stupidity?
Jim, I mean, there is a certain amount of politics that enters into what can be done. He's got a minority government.
What do you mean, a certain amount?
He's got a minority government.
You know why he's going to bail out Quebec? You know why there is going to be a big fat subsidy check for the Quebec forestry industry? Because it's all about buying the Quebec vote. And if he can buy the Quebec vote in the hinterland.
You know, Jim, obviously, you know, you could be right. There could be a check. I hope there's not. It's tough to do what you want to do in our system. The parliamentary system doesn't allow for it. You know, if we had a system where you didn't change the Constitution, but we actually got to vote for our leader, he got to select the cabinet, the MPs were actually responsible to the people who elected them, not to their leader, and the committees of the House actually had real research staffs and budgets, and we had a system where you could govern by coalition of the individual members of Congress. There have been Republican and Democratic of Parliament. There have been Republican and Democratic presidents who've made broad coalitions on important issues. You don't have to worry about minority and majority. And this doesn't require a constitutional convention to change it. It just requires 100 days of legislation to change the party structure. And
there
again,
go.
That's
there it is. Hey, hold on. Don't lose that thought. We got to take a break and
signaling.
Go to traffic.
Yeah, they're signaling.
Yeah,
they're doing
do
things.
All the business stuff.
You got it.
Barry Wiseman, Last Angry Man on the 6:53 on the Drive with Duff. And now we get to the story that Beryl was champing at the bit to talk about. We're talking about Bob Ray attacking Michael Ignatieff's comments. Not wise, very unwise, he said about Ignatieff's remarks that Israel's bombing of Cana in Lebanon during the summer war was not a crime against humanity, but pretty not far from it. So the question is now, this thing's reverberating around. Let's see, what happened today? Stephen Harper said, well, that's what you can expect from all those liberals. And then there was the reaction from Ray that said Stephen Harper had better take that back because that was really rude. So where are we now in this reverberation game, Beryl?
Well, I'll tell you what really ticked me off, Jim, and to use your expression, yanked my crank. National commentators were getting on and saying, well, you have to believe Bob Ray because his grandfather was Jewish and his wife is Jewish and they raised their kids Jewish. Now,
okay,
those are the same commentators that said you can be anti-Israel
without
being anti-Semitic. Ipso facto, you can be Jewish and still be anti-Israel. This is the same Bob Ray who during the war called for Israeli proportionality, denounced Israel for bombing too much, demanded a ceasefire in the second week of the war when even Arab states weren't demanding it. This is the same Liberal Party where Jared Kennedy, another of the candidates, Boris Verbashensky, one of his supporters, MP from Toronto, went to the Middle East, accused Israel of state terror, lost his position as deputy foreign affairs critic. Another Kennedy aide in BC, Thomas Hubert, posted patently anti-Semitic stuff on his website, had to resign. Now we've got Ignatieff. We had Denny Coderre organizing the Hezbollah rally in Montreal on August 6th and putting the Liberal Party's name on it. You know what? If it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And I'm just working on an article called The Party of None is Too Many. Because you know what? What is amazing to me is pro-Israeli, people who are pro-Israeli are pro-Israeli because they have the guts, the vision, the moral courage to support.
Let me finish.
I'm going to cut to the chase.
Wind up and
to
finish,
support
I ask
a democratic state that's the frontline state in the family of free nations. The history of the Liberal Party, however, from Mackenzie King's None Is Too Many policy about Jews to Lester Pearson whacking Israel to protect Britain and France getting out in a polite way from Suez.
Beryl, we don't have much time. Question here.
Yeah.
Is this going to change voting habits on the part of Canada's Jewish constituency? They've always voted. Hang on.
Israel has nothing, should have nothing to do with being Jewish. Canadians should have it.
I'm asking you about the Jewish vote.
Okay.
Where's it going to go?
Okay.
Is it
going
to go where it always has, to the Liberals? Or is Stephen Harper going to work the miracle that's never had happened before and manage to win over
Let's get one thing straight. Jewish votes in this country affect about 6 ridings. Muslim votes in this country affect about 15 ridings. That's number one. Let's get the arithmetic right. Secondly, is there going to be weakness in the Jewish vote? Yes. I give speeches throughout a lot of Jewish areas, the Jewish ridings. I've seen weakness in Mount Royal. There'll be a movement. How big a movement? Nobody can tell. I think there'll be a bigger movement in places like Toronto than in Montreal. They're really angry in Toronto. And they're really angry at
West. Well, they're angry in the control room, too, because they want us out of here. Thanks very much, Beryl. We'll talk to you on the other side. Well, I'll listen to you on the other side. Thanks very much to Margot Edwards, Melissa Wheeler, and, of course, the ever-patient Chris Bumbry for getting the show to air. Thank you.
You've heard me talk endlessly and ceaselessly on this program about the need for moral courage in this country, about how our national character is affected by our place in the world and the role we take in it. To have the courage to be involved in mankind's transcendent yearning for redemptive change. And often I am so angry and so frustrated that we in this country don't find the right path. I'm happy to say that today's program is going to be a little different because in the past 24 hours we've seen courage in Montreal and in Toronto, in the French-speaking part of Canada and in the English-speaking part of Canada. We've seen demonstrations and manifestations by people taking part in public life, by civil society, clear messages that they understand that freedom, liberty, That family of nations that celebrate those values of which Canada is one were not created in order to disappear, that we will endure and flourish, that we are the children of hope, that we are the champions of the brave, and that we will neither be broken by adversity nor demoralized by any challenge, that we will carry the shield of freedom, and we will honor the sword of democracy. Brave words came all over Canada over the past 24 hours. And I'm going to start with one that came out of Montreal yesterday and will be joined by one of the lead authors of this on Tuesday. Prior commitments prevent him from coming on. And then we're going to go to one that went national. And you're going to have a remarkable half hour. I want you to listen to this. This was in yesterday's La Presse, signed by several dozen leading Quebec intellectuals, led by Germain Belzile, economist and professor at Institut Commercial Montréal. And I'm going to give you a rough running translation, because the CRTC, of course, doesn't like it when we do English and French in this supposedly bilingual country. But it starts off, nous écrivains, artistes intellectuels, we, writers, artists, intellectuals, politicians, simple Canadian citizens, want to express by this letter our total solidarity with French philosopher Robert Redeker, who was condemned to death by fatwa for simply stating an opinion and questioning the arguments put forward by supporters of radical Islam. We salute his intellectual courage. Not only would we exhort the French state to take all measures necessary that are appropriate under the Constitution for his protection, but we would demand to Ottawa that Quebec denounce with equal force the second affair of Salman Rushdie. We hope that we live to see other countries in the European Union, as well as institutions that they represent, take clearly their responsibilities in the face of global terror that threatened to put us into a reign of tyrannical societies and dictatorships. We would hope that the United States of America and Russia come together without delay for the defense of the central values of our civilization, a civilization par laquelle la liberté de penser n'est pas négociable, a civilization in which the freedom to think is not negotiable. When Muslim authorities, if they want to participate in our society, in this debate, announce, promote, and encourage a neo-Bolshevik Islamism centered and guided by fatwas, we must all disassociate ourselves from them and use all power actively to silence them. Enfin, finally, we affirm that the moment should not be a defensive moment, that the time is here to resist totalitarianism and terrorism, and not only to align several words on petitions like ours, but to stop criminals, powerful criminals, who have no fear, and to stop their barbarous intimidations et leur projet liberticide. And this remarkable letter appeared in La Presse yesterday, as I said, signed by 20 leading Quebec intellectuals. Germain Belzile, professor at HEC Montréal, will be joining us on Tuesday to discuss this. Less than 12 hours later, in every major paper in the country, the Gazette in Montreal, the Globe and Mail in Toronto, the Calgary Herald, the Ottawa Citizen, a yet broader vision of where Canada should be in the world came out. And I'm going to read that right after this break, and we're going to be joined by its author. We'll be right back. You know, I'm often called in my writings a Tom Paine polemicist. But my God, I wish I had written this one that appeared all over the country today, full page, Canadian Coalition for Democracies. It was called Taking a Stand at the UN. Last month, Prime Minister Stephen Harper spoke before the United Nations General Assembly and delivered a dose of realism and integrity that has long been absent from Canadian foreign policy. Dare we dream that the next time Canada takes the podium at the UN, we will hear something like the following. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to be here today. Where to start? Let's go to the Far East and work our way around the globe. North Korea's escalation of its nuclear threat against the free world leaves little doubt about where this trajectory will end. Events have proven that incentives only increase Kim Jong-il's belligerence. Canada supports a selective embargo of North Korea and supports Japan's development of a regional nuclear deterrence. China is one of the largest recipients of Canadian foreign aid. Why does a $1 trillion economy send its tax dollars to an $8 trillion economy? Should a manufacturing colossus like China enjoy the preferential tariffs normally reserved for a developing nation? Are we helping China to buy the 800 missiles that aims at Taiwan? Simply put, our aid for China is over. As for Iran, attention Europe. The nuclear missiles Iran wants to build can incinerate your cities, yet you choose to demonize Israel and America while secretly hoping they neutralize Iran and save your hides. Smart people know that you cannot appease an apocalyptic madman like Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, but if you insist on doing so again, you'll be on your own when Paris is reduced to radioactive rubble. In Afghanistan, the UN took a principled position, and words cannot describe how grateful I am to the men and women of the UN-authorized forces. But talk of a traditional peacekeeping and rebuilding mission as distinct from a combat mission dangerously misses the point. Rebuilding Afghanistan while the Taliban remain active is like building homes in the middle of a brush fire while proudly refusing to extinguish the flames. These same critics signal to the Taliban that if only they attack our soldiers with enough brutality, we will pull out and let them get back to crushing women, killing teachers, and recreating the swamp from which 9/11 crawled. I am proud to tell you that Canada is staying the course in Afghanistan. In its first 42 years, the United Nations tabled 370 resolutions condemning Israel, and none critical of the PLO or any other state. When Syria slaughtered 20,000 of its own citizens of Hama in 1982, or when it sponsored the destruction and occupation of Lebanon, or even when Iraq massacred its Kurdish citizens with poison gas, nothing. So here's Canada's approach. We will vote no on every anti-Israel resolution until we see such reprimands applied even-handedly against all players in the Middle East according to the scale of their misdeeds. I would like to offer an invitation. There are a few members in the United Nations who recognize that a brutal global jihad is being waged against the free world, but more who are friends or appeasers of that jihad. Today, I am inviting the leaders of those democratic nations who have proven their commitment to defending freedom and tolerance to join me at a conference of free nations to be held in Canada. There, we will take the historic first steps in forging a democratic alliance to defeat this brutal common enemy. Nope, those words haven't yet been delivered by a prime minister of this nation. But thank God, they were written by our next guest, Alistair Gordon, president of the Canadian Coalition for Democracies. Alistair, well done, and my God, you know, this is 24 hours to have some hope that there is some moral courage flowing through this country again.
Well, thank you, Beryl. I really appreciate the accolades coming from you. They mean a lot. And yes, I mean, the letter signed in support of Robert Redeker shows absolutely tremendous courage. You know, I think we miss a fairly obvious weapon in dealing with the Islamist threat. And if we go back to the, and really that's the universalization of victimhood. And if we go back, for example, to the slaughter and mayhem that resulted from a few cartoons, should every major media outlet in the world have then published those cartoons, the Muslim extremists would have lost their capacity to divide and conquer. If when the Pope made his declaration, if every leader of congregation, church, religion reinforced and repeated that statement, then they've got the whole world to deal with, not just the head of one religion. And I think that is increasingly what needs to be done. It is not a difficult step, and it requires very little courage on the part of the followers to do what the leader did. And I think that would go a long way to blunting the effectiveness of Islamofascism.
Well, you know what I take heart from? By the way, I just wanted to give one quote here. Germain Belzile, one of the authors of the Quebec letter, of the Montreal letter, had this to say to the National Post. He said, we have to say the buck stops here. We have to stop apologizing. We have to stop backtracking like the people who published Danish cartoons did, and even like Benedict XVI did. I'm often told in the work that I do, and I'm sure you're told in the work that you do, oh, why bother? Canadians aren't going to change. It's up to governments. But you know what? It's more than just the question of Islamofascism. It's the question that in one 24-hour period, people led by you, people led by Belzile and his colleagues in Montreal, found the moral vision not to go into that hottest place in hell that's reserved for those who maintain their neutrality in times of moral crisis. Suddenly, in a 24-hour period, things coalesced. There's an economic journalist in Montreal named Natalie O'Grabley who writes a column on Thursdays, and I was just reading her column today, and it's on economic affairs, but I just want to take the title and a quote from it. The title today was A Collective Mea Culpa, and the essence of the article was, we have to realize that the state is incapable of furnishing everything to everyone at all times. Canadians have for so long on the political level looked to the state for leadership. People have said, no, people can't do anything. No, Canadians' attitudes won't change. No, we don't have the guts. But you had the guts. And Germain Belzile and his colleagues had the guts. And not only did you have the guts, but you obviously had the backing to put this into major newspapers across the country. Is there a national stirring that's now being led? I like to believe that when people show courage, others will follow, that people instinctively understand what's right. Is that what's happening in this country now?
I do definitely think, Beryl, that there is a shift. If I think back a year ago, it was very difficult to get anybody to look upon the kind of conflict that's going on in the world now with anything other than moral equivalency. Increasingly, more and more people are identifying that there is one side that is the enemy and there is the other side that is us. And that we must defeat the enemy. We must stop apologizing, groveling, backtracking, everything that Germain Belzile was saying in that letter.
And that's where we have to go and turn collective mea culpas into collective character and conscience. Al Gordon, please stay with me because they're going to kill me for passing the deadline for paying some bills. So we'll be right back. And we're talking about a remarkable 24 hours that, to my mind anyway, has seen a collective national stirring in Quebec, in Ontario, of character and conscience. And we're talking to one of the leaders of that stirring of character and conscience, Alistair Gordon of the Canadian Coalition for Democracies. I would encourage you to go to their site, canadiancoalition.com, and read the full text of this what could be considered a manifesto for Canada's future. Al, how did this come to be? I know you had written a letter saying the things I wish the these are the things I wish the Prime Minister would say at the UN. How did it get converted into this national agenda?
Well, as you mentioned, it started as an op-ed that I wrote and was published in the National Post last month. A couple of very generous Canadian philanthropists were taken by it and appreciated the fact that a lot of the foreign policy concerns that they had were and that are not in any way being discussed in this country were itemized in that op-ed. And so they saw benefit in taking this to a very significant next stage, which was to get it into major print media across the country. And so that was really what happened. We then adapted the op-ed to be an ad in terms of changing its format.
Right.
And what you saw in the newspapers today is the end product of that. So they deserve absolutely immense credit for their generosity and their vision. In fact, writing it is a piece of cake.
Oh, no. It's the words that matter. You know, I'm sorry, with all due respect to philanthropists out there, we both got a lot of good people with us. The money's there, but the words are the bullets. Al, stay with me. Well, let's take a caller. Michael, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me on board. I just want to make a couple of points.
Sure.
The first point is that these intellectuals from Quebec,
yeah,
they should be concentrating on pseudo-legalized and institutionalized racist linguistic policies in the past 30 years.
Well, you know, right now they're taking a look at this case of Robert Redeker. I mean, I don't know if you're aware of it.
Clean up your own house.
No, but you can't clean up your own house first. That's been the problem in Canada. We've always been looking at our little quarter of acre land, I'm all right, Jack, and the hell with you, Charlie. If you stop being involved, Michael, in the world, in mankind's struggles for redemptive change, you wither at home. You just wither at home. All they're trying to do is save a man's life. Robert Redeker is a French philosopher who had a fatwa issued against him for a critique of Islam.
Because he's French. If he was
No. There are Anglo.
If he was from England,
Michael, the saint. There have been petitions for people in England. When fatwas were issued against Salman Rushdie, he was living in England. There are Anglophones like Barbara Kay that signed this letter. This was not just Francophones. It's important that this is done. And, you know, French intellectuals have spoken out.
But
Michael.
Include the Quebec file, the Quebec file.
Michael, you're right, but this wasn't a universal declaration of human rights. This was a petition where a group of Quebec intellectuals stood up and said, enough to Islamofascism.
Well, this is already obvious.
Michael, I wish it was as obvious to everybody as it's obvious to you. I'm not disagreeing with you about the policies of Quebec, but, you know, you got 50% of this country that doesn't think that there's a threat. And in Quebec, it's 60%.
Well, polls prostitute democracy. I don't believe polls.
I fully agree with you, but you know what? After the August 6th Hezbollah rally, led by major leaders of Quebec, I had a serious concerns for this province.
I know there's a major misindoctrination and that's causing millions of pseudo-Muslim syndromes. I agree with you, okay? May we hit the second point here?
Sure.
Michael, can I just interject for a second on your first
Michael,
point?
That's Alistair Gordon.
Yeah, hi. You raise the question of cleaning up our own act first, but I don't believe Canada has a 30-year history of declaring death sentences on people who express
their
opinion. And so for us to worry about the minor imperfections that still exist in this country... ...of whom by...
Okay, gentlemen, we just gotta take a break here. We can continue this after the break at the bottom of the hour. Montreal will be right back.